Well, hello there, and welcome to the Cory Doctorow podcast. Second week in a row that I'm recording this in the bedroom instead of in the office. That's because today is Bank Holiday Monday here in London. Bank holiday being a curious British tradition of taking the day off on the day that the Bank of England closes. Go fig. Anyway, it is a holiday for me indeed. It wasn't going to be. It was going to be a working day for me, as Saturday and Sunday were, because I needed to finish my new novel. Except I finished my new novel last night about 7 o'clock. If you watch my Twitter stream, at Doctorow, you will have seen me completely going bananas at the feeling of release after 8 months of constant work, 9 months actually of constant work. I started it right after the new year, and actually getting this thing in the can. It's For the Win, weighed in at 165,000 words, which is long, probably have to be cut before it's all done. And my editor has a copy now, and I will be printing a few copies to send out to some first readers tomorrow when the copy shops reopen. And I am generally in very good spirits, if feeling slightly exhausted and limp as a result. The other big writing project the last month, Chicken Little, some good news about that. This is my 20,000-word novella that I wrote for a Frederick Pohl tribute anthology called Gateways. Jim Frankel, the editor of the anthology, has approved it. So what am I going to work on now that I've got these two big writing projects out of the way? Well, this week I'm going into production on three writing assignments. One is the short story Epoch that I'm writing for Mark Shuttleworth, who has commissioned it as part of the With a Little Help short story collection. I'm also writing my first column for Publishers Weekly about the With a Little Help short story collection. My latest Guardian column, which I will be writing tomorrow, is going to be entitled How to Say Stupid Things About Social Media. And you'll have to wait for that. And I'm also going to be getting really earnest on the production on With a Little Help. It's been going kind of low grade all summer, and now it's time to kick it into high gear. Well, it's time to start reading to you. It's going to be another short reading because it's one of those holiday days, but I wanted to get one in the can this week since we're so close to finishing Someone Comes to Town, Someone Leaves Town. And it's been a good day here in London. We spent the morning at the zoo and the afternoon doing a little shopping, picking up some necessities, and now we're going to hang out with the kid this afternoon just as soon as I get this podcast in the can, so the sooner the better. Here we go. The probably the fourth to last installment of my reading of Someone Comes to Town, Someone Leaves Town, my 2005 novel from Tor Books, forthcoming in the UK from HarperCollins Voyager next summer. He made pancakes and cut up pears and peaches and apples and bananas for fruit salad. "This reminds me of the pancake house in town," Bart said. "Remember?" Adam nodded. It had been Ed Fred George's favorite Sunday dinner place. "Do you live here now?" Mimi said. Alan said, "Yes." She slipped her hand into his and squeezed his thumb. It felt good and unexpected. "Are you going to tell her?" Billy said. She withdrew her hand. "What is it?" Her voice was cold. Billy said, "There's no good that comes of keeping secrets. Krishna and Davy are planning to attack Kurt. Krishna says he owns you. He'll probably come for you." "Did you see that?" Adam said. "Him coming for her?" "Not that kind of seeing. I just understand enough about people to know what it all means." Trey met her at 6, and he was a little paunchier than she'd remembered, his high school brawn run a little to fat. He shoved a gift into her hand, a brown paper bag with a quart of cheap vodka in it. She thanked him simperingly and tucked it in her knapsack. "It's a nice night. Let's get takeout and eat it in Hyde Park." She saw the wheels turn in his head, meal plus booze plus secluded park equals pussy, 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 and she let the tip of her tongue touch her lips. This would be even easier than she'd thought. "How can you tell the difference," Arthur said, "between seeing and understanding?" "You'll never mistake them. Seeing it is like remembering spying on someone, only you haven't spied on him yet. Like you were standing behind him and he just didn't notice. You hear it, you smell it, you see it, like you were standing in him sometimes, like it happened to you. Understanding, that's totally different. That's like a little voice in your head explaining it to you, telling you what it all means." "Oh," Andy said. "You thought you'd seen, right?" "Yeah. Thought that I was running out of time and going to die or kill Davy again or something. It was a feeling, though, not like being there, not like having anything explained." "Is that going to happen?" Mimi asked Brad. Rad looked down at the table. Answer unclear. Ask again later. That's what this magic eight ball I bought in a store once used to say. Does that mean you don't know? I think it means I don't want to know. Don't worry, Bert said. Kurt's safe tonight. Alan stopped lacing up his shoes and slumped back on the bench in his foyer. Mimi had done the dishes, Bill had dried, and he'd fretted about Kurt. But it wasn't until he couldn't take it anymore and he was ready to go and find him, bring him home if necessary, that Billy had come to talk to him. Do you know that for sure? Yes. He has dinner with a woman, then he takes her dumpster diving and comes home and goes to bed. I can see that. But you don't see everything. No, but I saw that. Fine, Adam said. He felt hopeless in the face of these predictions, as though the future were something set and immutable. I need to use the bathroom, Billy said, and made his way upstairs while Alan moved a sofa and paged absently through an old edition of Alice in Wonderland, whose marble frontispiece had come detached. A moment later, Mimi joined him, sitting down next to him, her wings unfolded across the sofa back. How big are they going to get, do you think? She said, arranging them. You don't know. They're bigger than they've ever been. That was good food, she said. I think I should go talk to Krishna. Adam shook his head. Whoa. You don't need to be in between us. Maybe I can get him to back off on you, on your family. Mimi, I don't even want to discuss it. It's the right thing to do, she said. It's not fair to you to stay. You want to have your wings cut, Alan said. That's why you want to go back to him. She shied back as though he'd slapped her. No, you do. But what Billy didn't tell you is that Krishna's out there with other women. I saw him today, with a girl, young, pretty, normal. If he takes you back, it will be as a toy, not as a lover. He can't love. Christ, she said, why are you saying this? Because I don't want to watch you self-destruct, Mimi. Stay here. We'll sort out Krishna together. And my brother. Billy's here now, and that means they can't sneak up on us. And these, she said, flapping her wings, one great heave that sent currents of air across the room that blew the loose frontispiece from Alice in Wonderland toward the fireplace grate. You'll sort these out, too. What do you want from me, Mimi? He was angry now. She hadn't spoken a word to him in weeks, and now... Cut them off, Alan. Make me into someone who can go out again, who can be seen. Do it. I have the knife. Adam squeezed her eyes shut. No, he said. Goodbye, she said, and stood, headed for the stairs. Upstairs, the toilet flushed, and they heard the sink running. Wait, he said, running after her. She had her hand on the doorknob. No, she said. She was crying now. I won't stay. I won't be trapped again. Better to be with him than trapped. I'll do it, he said. If you still want me to do it in 2 days, I'll do it. She looked gravely at him. Don't you lie to me about this, she said. Don't you dare be lying. He took her hands. I swear, he said. From the top of the stairs, then. Whoops, said Billy. I think I'll just tuck myself into bed. Mimi smiled and hugged Alan fiercely. Trey's ardor came out with his drunkenness. First a clammy arm around her shoulder, then a casual grope at her boob, then a sloppy kiss at the corner of her mouth. That was as far as she was going to let it go. She waited for him to move in for another kiss, then slipped out from under his arm so that he fell into the roots of the big tree they'd been leaning against. She brained him with a vodka bottle before he'd had a chance to recover. Then, as he rocked and moaned, she calmly took the hunting knife she'd bought at the Young Street Survivalist store out of her bag. She prized one of his hands off his clutched head and turned it over, then swiftly drew the blade across his palm, laying it open to the muscle. She hadn't been sure that she'd be capable of doing that, but it was easier than she'd thought. She had nothing to worry about. She was capable of that. And more. All right, told you to be a short one. Talk to you in a week.
You've been listening to the Cory Doctorow Podcast, licensed under Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, Sharealike US 3.0. Or as Woody Guthrie put it in another context, this song is copyrighted in the U.S. under Seal of Copyright 154085 for a period of 28 years, and anyone caught singing it without our permission will be a mighty good friend of ourn, because we don't give a dern. Publish it, write it, sing it, swing to it, yodel it, we wrote it, that's all we wanted to do. Many thanks to John Taylor Williams for mastering. That's Ryneck Studio, W-R-Y-N-E-C-K Studio at gmail.com. John Taylor Williams is a full-time self-employed audio engineer, producer, composer, and sound designer. In his free time, he makes beer, jewelry, odd musical instruments, and furniture. He likes to meditate, to read, and to cook. Talk to you next week.